there was where I built the resilience. See, there I began to realize that, yes, I'll get into difficult situations, but yes, I can get out of them. Yes, I can stand up for myself. I can be determined and I can face obstacles. So I learned a lot and about myself, about the world, you know, that not everybody is middle class, white, you know, that we have a whole different world out there with a lot of problems. And I learned those problems and I have more compassion and empathy. But I also learned a lot about my own strength and that, you know, you can get into a scrape, that's okay, you get out of it.
Welcome to Reinvention Rebels, stories of brave and unapologetic women, 50 to 90 years young, who have boldly reimagined life on their own terms to find new purpose and possibilities. I'm your host, Wendy Battles. Ready for a dose of inspiration? Let's get to it. Hey, Reinvention Rebels, welcome to the podcast. I'm so happy you've come along for a reinvention ride, and I've got a fantastic episode for you today. Someone who is full of inspiration, who will help you think differently, perhaps bigger about your own life. And I'm excited to introduce her in just a moment. But before we get to that, I like to do this at the top of every episode. I like to share a review from a listener. This review is titled, "Thank You, Wendy Battles." And it's actually from a fellow Reinvention Rebel, Barbara Babinko-Healy, who was featured on the podcast this summer back in July with a really amazing episode. So if you haven't listened to it, you should definitely take a listen. She's something else at 71 years young. And this is what Barbara said. Wendy is the all-time best interviewer, and her podcast is beyond awesome. She makes everyone comfortable and engaged, those being interviewed and those listening. Thank you, Wendy, for bringing us these women that age with grace and purpose and are role models for women and men of all ages. I can't wait to listen to the next one. Ooh, Barbara, thank you so much. That is beautiful. And I'm so appreciative of your beautiful, kind words. As many of you know, this is my joy, my pleasure, my passion to illuminate, elevate, celebrate midlife and older women that are up to the coolest things and have reinvented themselves. So if you love the podcast as much as I love making it for you, I encourage you to take a couple of moments when you're done. If you are on Apple Podcasts, pop over, leave a review. You'll see also in the show notes, there are lots of other ways that you can leave a review. And I really, really appreciate it. Just makes it a little easier for people to find the podcast and to inspire lots of people. So thanks. And now on with what is going to be a fabulous interview. Imagine if you shook things up in every decade of your life, hitting the do-over button with the passion, curiosity, and nothing's going to stop me now determination of a lioness. That is the life of my guest today, Janet Luongo, someone who believes we each have unique gifts we can use to make the world a more just and equitable place for all. She has been a champion of women's rights, diversity and inclusion, the arts, public education, and creativity throughout her life. At 72 years young, this creative soul, speaker, writer, and artist has reinvented herself many times over. Like many of us, she had big, juicy dreams from her youth and throughout her life. And this fabulous reinvention rebel hasn't let anything get in her way of achieving them. A few highlights. At 50, Janet quit her job knowing there was something more and unleashed her creativity in a variety of ways, from writing her first book and teaching at a local university to doing her first spoken word performance and becoming president of the New York City chapter of the National Speakers Association. Wow, that's quite a decade. In her 60s, Janet embarked on a solo trip to China to lecture on creativity, became a certified yoga instructor, and became a health coach. That's when our paths crossed through our Institute of Integrative Nutrition connection. At 62, she reinvented herself as a writer and wrote a draft of her memoir. And you know what's cool? At 72, she just published her memoir, Rebellion 1967, detailing her struggles, triumphs, and lessons learned through a tumultuous year in her life. Janet Luongo, I am so excited you're here. Welcome to the Reinvention Rebels guest chair.
Thank you so much.
I love this. It's nice to connect. We've known each other for a while. It's probably been, I don't know, a dozen years or something like that. But it's not that often I have a chance to really connect with you. So it's like a full circle moment. And you're up to all kinds of really wonderful things as a Reinvention Rebel. So we have a lot to talk about. And I'd love to start by talking a little bit about reinvention. I love how you've reinvented yourself multiple times in so many different ways across decades. And I certainly think as women, it's very typical that we reinvent ourselves. We have new experiences. One thing leads to the next. It does remind me that it's never, ever too late to reinvent ourselves, no matter how old we are. Of all of your reinventions, and you have had many, which one stands out as your most impactful?
Well, I think quitting my day job at a very precarious moment because our son was just starting college with a hefty tuition payment. And we needed my income, but sometimes you just know when something's wrong and you need to change. And that's what happened. And I knew that if I stayed where I was, I would not grow. And if I left, I would find new good things. And that's what happened. Even better. And the money problems, you know, they took care of themselves over time. But as you said in the introduction, I don't like to let things stop me. When I know in my gut, I have a gut feeling often about what I need to do. And if I'm being unappreciated in any way, I feel that's not the right environment for me. So I will move on.
So you're very attuned to what's going on around you. You're very self-aware to recognize something doesn't feel right. And I also hear that you're pretty fearless in taking action, especially when, well, we have to pay for tuition, but I'm going to quit my job anyway, which is impressive. I'm kind of curious as to whether when you quit your job and you had this idea of something new, reinventing yourself, did it unfold the way you expected it to?
No, it didn't. And before I go into that, I have to say that, of course, I did have the backing of my husband. He had a full-time job. So we had a base.
Yeah.
That said, we still needed me to make some money. And so, no, things were totally different. I applied right away to the National Speakers Association, but not knowing if I would get in. And I did get in. And then that became an unexpected challenge. I have administrative skills. That's what I was doing. The job I quit at a museum as the head of the art and science education. So I knew how to take care of details. And so they asked me to lead the speakers' university. So they liked how I did that. So they asked me to be president. I just started, you know, there. So there was recognition. The opposite of what I had left was being dissed, kind of. So that was an extraordinary development. And then I was invited to write my first book by a member of the National Speakers Association. That's Jan Yeager. You may know her. She started her own publishing company in Stanford, Hanaquang Creek Books. And she asked me to write creativity, affirmations on creativity. And then that book was picked up by a woman who lectures in China, an American woman who lectures in China, and said, oh, I love this book. It's helping me get through my own exhibition. And I would love for you to teach my students in China. So, wow. So that was the end of the decade, you know, and then I just, again, went on my own and, you know, no language, no, I really knew very little about China. So going there on my own, I felt very brave doing that. I didn't feel scared. They're very civilized, but there a lot could go wrong, and I wouldn't really know how to get out of it if it went wrong.
Right. And I think that, you know, anytime you're traveling with someone, it's great because you can kind of figure it out together. But when you're doing it by yourself, it's exciting. It's sometimes scary. It's empowering. It's many different things. And that seems to be a theme through these reinventions, because part of what I heard when you quit your job, and then you got involved with the National Speakers Association and it led to other things. It feels to me like when we are willing to take a risk, we don't always know the outcome, right? But we know that something's not right. We want something to change. And I think that Reinvention Rebels are really good at saying, okay, I may not know exactly how it's going to unfold because there's so many variables, but I'm willing to put myself out there. And often when we do, what I see is that all kinds of other things unfold that are moving us in just the right direction. And that's part of what I hear in your story, that one thing led to the next. And look at this. Then you were invited to write this book.
Yes, I think you put it very well, Wendy. And I think Goethe has a quote just like that, what you were saying, that once we act with boldness, then the universe has a way of supporting us. I'm paraphrasing, but it's a common idea. You know, when you are sure of yourself, you tend to attract. I believe that. And certainly you're more likely to get what you want if you actually take action than if you just keep thinking about it. So that's how it unfolds. But the risks have to be somewhat calculated. I was recruited immediately by another museum. That's how I got kept my income. As soon as I left one museum, another museum quickly said, oh, well, can you work for us? And that was on a freelance basis, which I love because I love freedom. But yes, the whole idea of risk, you know, life is always changing and you can always change again if the next thing doesn't work out.
Yeah, that kind of mindset of seeing, you know, seeing endless possibilities. That's part of what I hear you saying, that with this notion of freedom, you like freedom. You don't like being so tied down. And it seems like that freedom gave you the opportunity to try these different things, to experiment. And that spirit of, well, I'm just trying it out and I can always do something else. I think it's a really important spirit to have if we want to reinvent ourselves, because one of the things I've noticed is that it doesn't always work out the way I want it to.
Right.
And sometimes I have this very prescribed way. Well, if I do X and Y and Z, it should really work out. And we know life is so circuitous sometimes.
Exactly. And the idea of having a good spirit, like you said, in that way of trying new things, that's really the creative thinking. That's the way of thinking that your life is play. I'm going to try this, try that. It's experimentation, it's discovery, you know, and it's fluid. And that decade also, I worked with the Women's Caucus for Art. I had started a nonprofit chapter of the Women's Caucus for Art. And then in 2005, we made a film, Women Make Art. And to me, what's interesting about art is the creative thinking part. And that book I wrote was really about that. It wasn't about being creative. We think, oh, you mean how to paint or make music? No, That's of course included, but what I was talking about was the creative attitude that we create our lives. With every thought we have, we create our day. If we have an attitude the day is going to be good, it probably will. If you think it's going to be lousy, well, you're probably going to sink into that. So we are creating all the time, creating our relationships, creating our family, whatever that is, with biological or friends. We create, you know, our life constantly through our thoughts.
And I really find that to be true in my own life, and have seen that. And my mindset makes all the difference about how things unfold and what I think is possible. And I see, again, this common theme with Reinvention Rebels, that they have this expansive way of thinking about the world. They're curious. They're interested in having fun, that they aren't so stuck on the results, because sometimes the results don't end up the way we expect, but there's this powerful lesson that is a stepping stone to the next thing that perhaps we're meant to do. So I like that idea.
You bring up the word possibility, which means a lot to me, because I fell in love with my third grade teacher, who was a beautiful Black woman who reminded me of Mahalia Jackson. And she was so kind and loving, and she was exciting us with exactly that. She would tell us in the third grade, you can do anything you want to do. She said, you know, we never thought we could fly. Then she pointed out the window, there was a plane flying by, and now we are flying. And so you just put your mind to what you want to do. So don't tell yourself it's not possible before you try it.
I love that you were getting these lessons when you were little, because I think so often kids don't hear things like that, or we're discouraging them, or we have preconceived notions of what they can do. And what I hear in this teacher is that she lit something in her students, this sense of possibility, and that you really carried that through your life. Hey, amazing listeners. Are you feeling a little social? Come join me on social media for a big dose of inspiration. You'll find me on Instagram at Reinvention Rebels. Same thing on Facebook. And also, I'm on Twitter at Rebels Reinvent. I look forward to seeing you soon. You talked about this idea of manifesting and how our thoughts are so important about what we create. And I'm curious, for someone who isn't perhaps as evolved or advanced in thinking about the whole idea of manifesting, because I know that a lot of women might want to reinvent themselves, but they're not really sure where to start, or maybe they've had experiences in the past that have been discouraging, or, you know, sometimes we have people in our lives that want the best for us, but it's not always coming out that way, right? That they maybe their own limiting thinking is being projected onto us, and we sometimes take that in. What suggestions do you have for listeners who want to begin manifesting something bigger and more exciting, but they don't know where to begin? What would you say? Are you thinking, I'll have some of what she's having? Reinvention Rebels are amazing, as you can hear from our discussion. They've put themselves first, decided their dreams matter, and are taking action. They have unleashed their inner rebel and are living on purpose in midlife. Are you ready to start putting yourself first and embark on your midlife dreams, focused on what you want, not others' ideas of what you should do? Come check out my new audio course, Midlife Reinvention from the Inside Out, 8 Essentials to Greenlight Your Life. I share my roadmap to get you started on your reinvention journey with the key components you need to navigate detours and get on the road to smooth reinvention sailing. Sis, it is time to give yourself the green light to shine in midlife and crush those dreams of yours with joy and purpose. Join today and let's reinvent and get inspired together. Details are in the show notes.
Yes, I kind of have a formula that I've developed just by looking back on what worked in my life. And I realized that every time things happened that I liked and was glad for the opportunity came from a desire that I had had previously, but not just a vague desire, but something that I could picture. So I think the first step for listeners is to just know what you want in your life and be able to picture the life you want. Picture it. Where are you? What colors are around you? What's the temperature? Who are you with? Or are you alone? What are you doing that you like? What makes life so good? What are you eating, et cetera? So if you can really picture it, I had always wanted to be a writer since early years. And when a friend of mine drew a picture of me, he was drawing a caricature, and he said, "What would you like to do in your life?" And I said, "I'd like to publish a book." I didn't know that he was drawing me publishing the book, stepping on the books, signing books, and saying, I have the deal. And then when he gave me the picture, so it was the picture of the success that was just a vague thought in my mind. That was still when I was working at the first museum. And then it happened. It doesn't happen necessarily the next week or year. It took, 5-6 years for that to happen. But the fact was, it was in my mind. And so that's the lesson. Picture it. Believe in it. Believe you can do it. And then if you can, actually take some steps toward it. And then the universe, I do believe, as Goethe says, will help you.
I totally believe that true. When you can picture it, when you believe it, I think that faith, that belief is everything. Because if we don't think it's possible, it's hard for the universe to support us in that. But I am right there with you. And that's such a great example, Janet, of this idea, like, I want to be a writer. And then, it's even better that you had this physical manifestation of it in this drawing to look at. Yeah. But even if you don't, right, conjuring up those images or doing vision boards or finding pictures of what you want. Like, I found all these pictures of all these microphones that I put on my vision board, thinking more about my voiceover acting, not even imagining it was going to manifest in this way as a podcast host, which has ended up being my greatest joy. Like, it is just something I love so much. So I do think you're right on about that. And something else, I remember when I watched your Petra Kucher presentation where you did this presentation, 20 slides, 20 seconds each. I was really inspired when I was listening and watching. And you talked about way back when how you wanted to have an art exhibit in Paris. And how that actually happened. And I'd love for you to just tell that story, because I think that that is all about manifestation and it's all about persistence, something else I think you really excel at. How did that unfold?
Well, yes, the same idea. My mother had pictures of the French Impressionists on the walls in our home when I was growing up. And they're lovely, as we all know. And there were pictures of the Impressionists painting each other painting. So I said, oh boy, they're in Paris. And I would like to be a painter in Paris someday, have my works on exhibit in Paris someday. And just had it in there in the back of my head. And then when I got married, which was also imagining, a wonderful husband, he became that dream come true. But we moved soon after we got married to Europe. And we lived in Geneva. And right away when I was there, I said, wait, Geneva is just 5 hours away from Paris.
Oh, and, perfect.
So many years later, of course, but the dream was still there. And because I had been an art educator and painter, but so here I am near Paris. So I applied to various galleries. Finally, I applied to one in Paris, and I did get accepted. And I told my husband, well, I'm going to take my work there. And when I got to the train station, the guard wouldn't help us get on the train, wouldn't let us get on the train, get me. I was going alone. He said, no, I didn't fill out the proper forms or something was wrong. And I outsmarted him. I was not, as you said, persistent. So I found a way to get to another train station in France because it had something to do with the border, going, transferring art from Switzerland to France. So I drove the car. I said, Jim, I'm taking the car. You go get to work by train. And I'm, you know, taking this. So, but we had very little gas. It was raining. I didn't really know where I was going. I didn't have a map. So I just found the train station, the first one. And then I was running around trying to get these boxes, you know, to the platform. And when I got on, I wanted to just tell Jim before I got on, tell him that I was going to get on the train. And I realized I didn't have my wallet, because when I bought the tickets and running around with the boxes, I must have dropped it. And so now the train pulls in. So I said to myself, how can I go to Paris with no money, no ID, no wallet? You know, do I have to turn back? That guy won. Do I get on? And yes, I got on the train. I got on the train.
How did you do that? Like, how do you get on a train with no money and no ticket and no, not even any ID?
Well, I did have my ticket, but I didn't have
it. Okay.
And I have to say, I was going to be met by a friend of a friend to help me move the cartons. So he also gave me money to eat the little supper. But I got my work to the exhibit. It was exhibited. But that was another, the way home was also hard. I got lost and but my husband said, is it worth it? And I said, it sure is worth it. My paintings are being exhibited in Paris.
So extraordinary to think that you did all that. How old were you at the time when all this was unfolding?
Oh, then I was in my mid-30s.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it.
We had a child at this point in Switzerland. Yeah.
I love that. I love how you embraced it. And even though, because I think when we're reinventing ourselves, there are all these unknowns. How will it work out? What will I do? What if it doesn't work out the way I expect it to? Then what? Then what do I do? And this is such a great example of, you had that vision, you were determined, you said, no matter what, okay, this person said, I can't do it. Because I know sometimes when someone says no, we're like, oh, okay. And maybe we give up or we don't push that hard. But there's something to be said for saying, well, there's more than one way to get to where I want to go. Literally, in this case, your destination, right? There was more than one way, right? And you were really creative. And you have this spirit of curiosity instead of this like dread, like, oh, you know, I can't do it. I think, again, it speaks to that mindset, that expansive mindset of possibility that I think is so key at any age to reinventing ourselves. And I love this story. And I love how you did this in your 30s. I love how you've done it basically in every decade. You found a way to reinvent yourself in these bold ways. And that, I think that's what's important, is to be able to hear other people's stories to inspire ourselves.
Good. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. So thank you for sharing that and being so bold, Reinvention Rebel. I love it. So I would love to know, what inspired you to want to chronicle your life in a memoir?
Well, it is a memoir, but it's unique in the sense that it's only 1 year. It's five seasons from the age 17 to 18. And I do have an afterword that tells sort of the highlights of what's happened since then. But it's basically just 1 year. And Wendy, it was a very, 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 very difficult year. And I guess that's why we write. If everything was honky-dory, I could write that. But who would want to read that?
Exactly. Exactly. It's the triumphs and the victories we want to know about.
Right, right, right. So it was a struggle because my parents got divorced after many years of fighting. And then my mother remarried immediately. And then she divorced that man within 2 months and wanted to reconcile with my father. And at this point, I was 17 and just about to start college. And I said, look, if I'm mature enough to start college, I'm mature enough to live on my own, because the craziness was too much for me, the ups and downs. They agreed and they set me up in an apartment with my 16-year-old sister.
Wow.
He wanted to leave too. A lot of people think that's, you know, was that even legal? It was very unusual. And it was, I didn't really know that they would agree to having me live on my own. And it was fun, of course, at first. You know, teenagers love it at first, but they didn't really check in on us. They were very involved in their own lives and problems. And so at one point I did actually leave home totally and went off with a jazz musician, ran away and didn't come back. And I did suffer there because there again, I had no money, just went off. And that was the impulsivity of youth that led me to do that, high risk taking. I wouldn't advise other people to follow me in this case because I did suffer heartbreak and poverty and danger. So it was not easy, but there was where I built the resilience. See, there I began to realize that, yes, I'll get into difficult situations, but yes, I can get out of them. Yes, I can stand up for myself. I can be determined and I can face obstacles. So I learned a lot and about myself, about the world, you know, that not everybody is middle class white, you know, that we have a whole different world out there with a lot of problems. And I learned those problems and I have more compassion and empathy. But I also learned a lot about my own strength and that, you know, you can get into a scrape. That's okay. You get out of it. So one person told me if they heard that story first and then they knew that if about the Paris story, that sure I would go if they heard this story first, because having gone through that in my teens, I was very strengthened to take more risks later in life. So I want people not to worry about being in bad times. They're often lessons. We don't want to hear that when we're in the middle of it, but don't feel like it's the end of the world, or there's nothing to be ashamed of when you face obstacles and adversity. And sometimes you cause it yourself, like I did as a teenager in some ways. I think it's important to take responsibility for your actions, and that's how we get out of them. If I got myself into this, I could get myself out of it, which I did in the end, and I had a beautiful life. So I want people to have hope that they will have the strength to face adversity.
I think that comes through so powerfully because when I'm thinking back to when I was 17 and I clearly was not living in New York City in an apartment by myself or my sister. And I wasn't dealing with the kind of adversity that you faced. And I'm really impressed that at that age you were able to glean these lessons. I think that is very powerful. I just think that I was thinking about boys at 17 and I don't know, trying to get on the dance squad and
good things. Those are good things. I wish I could have had that.
yeah. But I can see how this has made you so resilient. And I see how that if you can navigate your way through some difficult things, but things that made you much stronger, able to take care of yourself, able to really step into your independence in this bold way. How I agree with your friend that I do see that connection between those earlier experiences and that setting a tone for the rest of your life about being willing to put yourself out there and take some risks, because you took such big ones when you were younger, where I think a lot of us aren't necessarily in that situation. And even though it was hard, it was this immense growth opportunity. And that's, I think, a powerful lesson. I also think that what you said is so true, that those things, even though they're hard when we're going through them and it doesn't feel good, because who wants that? Who wants the things that sometimes happen to us? Because sometimes bad things do happen, but they definitely make us stronger.
They say what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right?
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Reinvention Ripples podcast today. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did and found it interesting, insightful, and inspiring. I've got a small favor to ask. If you love this, would you do me a favor and share a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts via your phone or iPad and share what you loved about it? Do you know that it makes it easier for people to find the Reinvention Rebels podcast when I get more reviews? And don't you think it's an awesome idea to make this kind of inspiration easier to find for our listeners? So thanks in advance for your time, your words, and your review. I really appreciate it. This memoir is chronicling this 1 year of impactful, profound living that really catapulted you forward in your life. How did it unfold? Did you proactively say, I'm going to write this memoir and I'm going to get it published? Or did some other circumstances come into play?
Yes. Well, I always had that, again, the idea of being a writer, as the caricaturist had picked up, and I had that picture. But I had done drafts. I had been writing journals throughout the experiences. And then when we moved to Europe, I had some time to paint and also write. I was very, very lucky. I did part-time art teaching, but I had time to write. And I wrote a draft, a full draft. And then my son was born. And I put the draft under the bed, you know, and it stayed there until he grew up, basically. And then I pulled it out and looked at it once in a while. And then finally, when I was just over 60 years old, 62 or so, and he was launched and he moved away. And I just said, okay, I took it out and I joined a writer's group. So there's the action. So every week I had to go with 4 pages, read them out loud, here, get feedback. After 1 year, I had another draft, a better draft. And then it took 9 more years to craft it. But I wanted it to be really well written, not just ranting of all these crazy experiences, you know, silly. It would seem silly. You did this, then you did that. I needed to write why I did the things, how I felt, what the world was like, what my family was like, what the society was like. It was the time of Martin Luther King, and I marched with him, and I got very inspired by the Black community and mentored where my parents were falling apart. And so there were so many things I wanted to say in the book. One person called it an anti-racist memoir because I was working with a Black artist, a mural painter. I worked for the first Black neurosurgeon in the country. So I had, again, very varied experiences, and it was just incredible.
What would you say is the most powerful lesson you learned from writing your memoir?
Well, you do learn a lot about yourself in writing a memoir. And it helps you discover who you are. So in one way, I do think it is a kind of therapy. Some people don't like to think of writing as therapy of any kind. It's just art and, you know, but I think it was for me somewhat. But I wanted it to be a lot more than that, too. It had to be meaningful to other people. So I think I touched on themes that are universal. Growing up, everyone grows up who's alive today. And everyone had a family of some kind, dysfunctional or not. And everybody lives in a society that impacts us and influences us and shapes us. So to me, you know, to describe those things and to no one in the book is a villain or a hero. Certainly not me as the protagonist. Everyone, their flaws are showing, you know, their good points are showing. So I believe that everyone has all the range of emotions and qualities, and no one is perfect or no one is totally evil. And the same thing with everyone, and the world itself is very mixed. And I wanted to show the whole variety of what I was experiencing.
I'm really looking forward to reading it one day because it sounds like it is really transformative, and it's really fascinating to hear about all these experiences. I didn't know before this that you were marching with Dr. Martin Luther King or that you were involved in all these other things. So I really love hearing this. And I think it reminds me how we are all very multifaceted. There are so many different layers to all of us. And I know sometimes we want to boil someone down to X or Y, and you know, we're all complicated people that are all on our own journey. I always feel like, you know, we're always having these experiences that hopefully help us evolve, as I hear in your case, where even from an early age, that really set the tone for these things that you did later, and certainly for writing this memoir, all these experiences, good, bad, and everything in between.
Yes. Yes. I did also learn, of course, a lot about writing and the craft of writing and the discipline it takes to write. But as you're saying, the important point is how multifaceted people are. And I embrace my generalist. When I was growing up, and probably everybody heard this, you know, jack of all trade, master of none. So you're supposed to, you know, you're supposed to direct yourself to one particular thing, which some people can do, and I envy them. You know,
yeah.
They're only good at one thing, or it stands out so much as their favorite thing to do that. But for me, I don't call it dabbling. I think that is an insult. But I think, you know, experimenting, trying, learning about different things. And I know people now who are very creative, and they say, oh, I embrace my being a generalist. And I think that's how I am, and that's fine.
And I am with you, because I never was one of those people that had something where I was just great at. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I thought I was kind of mediocre. And not in a bad way, but just I there was just nothing. I wasn't a great athlete. My family is totally non-athletic. I actually was pretty bad at sports. I was or you know, like, I played the piano, but I was mediocre. I played the clarinet, not that good. Like, you know, there was just nothing at the time. But I also think that we all evolve and mature in different ways. I think that if we're open, even if we're a generalist, as you're suggesting, that there's so many opportunities for self-discovery, self-growth, reinvention I feel like if we have that mindset of possibility and openness, even if we have some general kinds of things, that we can tune in and find it. Because I do think there is something that we all shine at, but sometimes it takes quite some time to uncover it.
Yes. And maybe the shining is doing many things all at once, just like a diamond doesn't just have one facet shining, but, you know, so your whole life, your whole spirit. And I do think, having been brought up a Unitarian Universalist, which also has influenced me greatly, the open-mindedness of it, and also the main concept of that we are all interconnected. Every issue has many, many sides, and one thing is influencing another. And we really need to learn that lesson now, to save our planet, because we need to realize during COVID and during this climate crisis that's here now that we need to stick together. We are literally in the same boat, you know, and we have to work together to solve our problems. So that whole idea of interconnectedness and multifaceted, and we're all a one individual that's part of a whole. And that kind of thinking is so important for our age.
It is. And did I ever tell you that I grew up being Unitarian?
No. Oh, another big thing in common.
Yeah. Yeah. And in New Jersey. And then we moved to Minnesota, and, you know, it was part of the Unitarian Church there. And then when I moved to Connecticut, I went to the Unitarian Church that's in the New Haven area. There's a couple of different ones.
Yeah.
So I've been around, but then I became a Buddhist. But it's still that same concept, though, whether it's Unitarianism, yes, or Buddhism, of this interconnectedness of life. And I think what you just said, Janet, is so true, that we have to figure out a way to really work together. And I know that sounds like pie in the sky and whatever, but I mean, that's what it boils down to, though, right? We mm-hmm. have one planet. We have one Earth. We have all different experiences and backgrounds, et cetera, that have informed our thinking about things. But when we can find that common ground to actually have meaningful conversation, I think is really the key to trying to transform our world, which, of course, is no easy task. Sounds good on paper, but you know.
Yes. But you're helping now and having these conversations, having people speak about their stories, which is how we will get to understand each other more, the more these stories come out. So thank you for your work.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and you're right. It is trying to have a deeper understanding for our experiences, and that we have so much more in common. We're much more connected than I think people sometimes like to think.
Yes.
So finding that common ground. So I'm curious about what the future holds for you when it comes to reinvention. You've reinvented yourself so many times, and at 72, you are spry and active and have so many things going on. that you are loving. What do you see in your future?
Well, I'm working some of the promo. I'm still doing some of the promotion for the book, which is kind of fun getting before audiences, book clubs and things. And I'm continuing to do my work on voting rights that I started just when the COVID started, March 2020. And I'm very convicted about that, that we need to have everybody being able to vote. So I do that through the Unitarian Church too, the UU, the vote it's called. And so I am doing that. And I have thought, well, maybe I'll go back to visual art because I couldn't really do painting and the writing at once. It was too much for me. The writing took all my creative energy. But I am thinking, Wendy, about how good I do think that the book would be as a movie. So I think my story would make a great TV series because there was such variety. She had six different jobs all over the city in different places and different characters. So I do think it would be a good TV series or a movie. So I might write a screenplay.
I think you should. I think that sounds pretty amazing. And I think this is also a beautiful example, Janet, of dreaming big.
Yeah.
Why not? Why not write a screenplay? Why not have your story turned into a movie or a TV show? I think that spirit of expansiveness and not limiting yourself is so key when it comes to reinvention. And you set such a great example of, at 72, you could do anything, right? Like, why not? Why can't you do that at 75 or 80 or however old you are when you write your screenplay?
Right. Well, I think I have to get going with it. But that's what I have to do is really picture that now and find images of movies and seeing it in lights and whatever. So that would be the next thing I would do is just really put it out there in the universe that that's what I think should happen.
And it will. It's interesting, again, when, you know, as we said earlier, when you have those dreams and you believe in your dreams and your thoughts are focused on that, what you can attract that supports that. And, you know, which just could be simple as, I don't know, you're somewhere and you sit next to someone randomly and you find out that they work for some studio or they know somebody. Yes. Or you just, you know how things happen sometimes in unexpected, often even unintentional ways.
Exactly.
But that's, I feel like, how the universe works. It's often, it's mysterious.
Yeah. That's wonderful. I love it.
Right? I'm like, oh, I'm just so excited to have you back so you can tell us about how you took this dream.
Oh boy.
And you wrote your screenplay.
That is accountability.
Right? Right? Exactly. So now that
follow up. Okay.
Right? Good motivation to
get
writing.
You're a good coach.
I love it. I love it. So my last question for you is about being unapologetic. I talk a lot about how reinvention rebels. They show up in so many different forms, ages, ways. There's no one way to be a reinvention rebel. It's whatever shows up in your life that inspires you to just go for it. And the common thread among every single person I've spoken to who has been in the Reinvention Rebels guest chair is that they are unapologetic about following their dreams. As you just so beautifully articulated how you're going to be onto your next big dream. And I know, though, that some women or men aren't there yet. They have this inkling, or maybe someone said, well, you could do that, but here are all the reasons you shouldn't do it. So it's not as easy for everybody. Like, you and I are very unapologetic about just going for it. Like, I want to do that, and I'm going to do that, and nothing's going to stop me. But how can people kind of find that space or work toward becoming more unapologetic about pursuing their dreams? Do you have any advice for someone who's listening and is more in the unsure camp? Like, I have a little idea, but I don't know. Like, how can they just kind of get that engine going that you have going, very steadily?
Well, I had some very good guidance early on when I went to a group called No Limits for Women Artists.
I love that.
And I went to that workshop, a weekend workshop with a visionary artist, and she told us, you know, we needed to know what we wanted. You can't get what you want until you know what you want. And I think it was Toni Morrison who said, if you can't imagine it, you can't get it. So put that a positive way. If you can imagine it, you can. It is within the realm of possibility. Now, here's an example. There was one woman in that group who would not say what she wanted. We had to keep asking, come on, there must be something you want. And she was so blocked. Finally, she said, I want to go to Hawaii. Well, why wouldn't you say that? Because I don't have the money to go and I don't think I'll ever get there. So I don't want to say it. We said, you know, you don't know if you'll get there, but you certainly won't get there if you never put it out there. That's what you want. And then I thought, well, what if she never gets it? And then I said to myself, it's okay that she knows she loves Hawaii, even if she never gets there. What's better, to deny you even want something else, to not even know who you are or what you want? I would rather know what I want. And okay, in this life, I didn't get it. But at least know what you want, what you value, rather than just have no wants, desires, or that would be really sad for me. So I hope that helps. And to be unapologetic is that you deserve it. If it's in your soul for you to have that desire, it's put there for some reason, and to have a sense that I deserve it. I may not get it. As you said before, we don't expect the outcome. All we can do is have our dream and take our steps. We can't determine what will happen, but you are worth it. You are worthy of all good things.
That is so beautifully put. And I think that is really the crux of becoming more unapologetic, is that feeling of, I deserve this. Much easier to go for it if you feel like you deserve it. And yes, we all deserve wonderful things.
Yes.
No matter who we are or where we are. And that was just so nicely put. So thank you for that. I think that will be inspiring to a lot of people to just start from where they are and remember that we are always deserving. I have a hunch, Janet, after hearing this conversation, that people would love to know how they can find your book, where they can get in contact with you, you know, on social media. You know, people want to be in the world of Janet Luongo. How can our listeners find you?
Okay, well, the easiest way is my website, which is very easy. It's janetluongo.com. So you can look me up. I'm on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram.
So you're everywhere. I love it. And I'm guessing from your janetluongo.com, which is a perfect website. I'm sure there probably aren't a lot of other people competing for that, that they can find out how to buy your book.
Yes. And they can find links there to bookstores, which is the best way to go because we want to support our bookstores. There are a lot of indie, you just have to put your zip code in and they'll tell you the bookstore near you, or it is available on Amazon, Kindle and paperback, and Barnes and Noble on paperback, also the Nook, and Walmart carries it.
Wow.
Walmart.
You've got it everywhere, which is,
I think, Google, Apple. So I think you can just type in the title, Rebellion 1967. A memoir, and it should come up, or just my name will bring it up, I think.
That is wonderful. That's wonderful. And all of that information you just shared is also in the show notes. So you can also look through wherever you're listening to the podcast. You can look in the show notes and actually have the links you can either tap or click on to be able to go right to Janet's website and also find her in all these different places on social media. Janet, I cannot thank you enough for joining me and sharing your journey, how you've reinvented yourself multiple times, inspiring us with your fortitude, your resilience, your determination, your spirit of I can do anything I set my mind to. All key ingredients of being a reinvention rebel. So thank you for sharing part of yourself with all of us.
Well, thank you so much, Wendy.
Hey, amazing listener. Are you ready for a dose of pro-age inspiration delivered to your inbox? Pop over to reinventionrebels.com and sign up for my news and notes. I share motivation, insights, and articles about how you can become a pro-age reinvention rebel too. Come join us. Are you tired of waiting for someday? Feel like you're too old or it's too late to reinvent yourself? Unsure of how you'd even get started on the path to midlife reinvention? I'm here to help as your guide on the side and host of the top 2% globally rated Reinvention Rebels podcast. I've been around the reinvention block a lot. Here's a simple way you can get started. Sign up for my free audio, 5 questions to spark your curiosity and inspire your Reinvention Rebel journey. It all starts with getting curious about what's possible. And I've got 5 questions to help tease out some very cool ideas. Let's get started. Details are in the show notes.